Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to our State of the Muni Market podcast series here on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. Joining us for the conversation today, glad to welcome back from our partners at Aberdeen, Head of U.S. Fixed Income, Jonathan Mondillo, joining us here from the UBS Chief Investment Office to lead today's conversation with Jonathan. Glad to welcome back Kathleen McNamara, Senior Municipal Strategist for the Americas with UBS CIO. So, Jonathan, Kathleen, welcome back to you both. Kathleen, I'll now pass it over to you to lead today's conversation.
Sure. And thanks so much, John, for coming back and joining us today for a conversation on the state of the municipal bond market. Now that the tax filing deadline is less than 2 short weeks away, we do expect investors to soon renew their focus on tax-saving strategies, and that, of course, includes investing in municipal bonds. So we do have a lot of topics to cover, so let's get started, John. My first question for you is simply, the investment-grade tax-exempt municipal bond market is posting a slight loss thus far in 2024. By contrast, we're seeing lower-rated high-yield munis outperform. Looks like the returns year-to-date are closer to 1.5%. Against that backdrop, what are your reflections on muni performance year-to-date, and do you think that high-yield munis can continue to outperform their investment-grade counterparts in the months ahead?
Yeah, first of all, Kathleen, thank you very much for having me. Dan, you as well. To your point, Kathleen, I think maybe coming as a bit of a surprise to some, just given the strength of the high-yield municipal bond market, but I think we at Aberdeen have been quite constructive to start the year on high yield munis, and we probably remain constructive on a go-forward basis when we look at fundamentals. High yield munis, I guess, tend to be much case by case, but broadly speaking, fundamentals are strong on the back of a really resilient economy and certainly near full employment. I think technicals are certainly supportive and have been over the first quarter of this year, with flows returning to high-yield mutual funds. And all-in yields are still attractive, I think, with high-yield index offering close to 9% on a taxable equivalent basis. So certainly yields have come in, but still looking extremely attractive. Even when we look at things from a spread basis, when we look at high-yield munis, looks roughly in line relative to IG, and actually a bit cheap relative to BBB names. And then relative to our corporate counterparts, you can pick up roughly 100 basis points in high-yield munis when you factor in that tax exemption. So we think the asset class has performed as expected. And on a go-forward basis, we still think that there's room to run in high-yield munis.
Okay, thanks for that, John. And certainly, you know, 9% taxable equivalent yield is certainly attractive. Moving on to rates, I mean, it appears that rates are near peak levels. I mean, obviously, there's a debate going on about that. But anyway, it appears that they're near the peak rather than the bottom. Against that backdrop, how are you thinking about duration within the municipal bond portfolios? And that's both in the investment grade segment as well as in high yield, since the composition of both is quite different.
Yeah, I mean, probably not dissimilar across investment grade to high yield. And obviously, like I said, when we get into high yield munis, it's really case by case on where we feel comfortable investing between, you know, two very individual credits, as well as where we're looking to invest in terms of duration within those individual issuers. To your point, though, you know, it has been a debate. And I think when we look at the rate moves over the last 6 months, you know, verdict's still out. I think while we agree that rates are at or near peak levels, we probably remain a bit cautious on duration, and more specifically where we're adding into our portfolios. The big question mark, and certainly one of the reasons why we've seen this whipsaw over the past two quarters in rates is really just how much the Fed is going to cut, you know, as we come into the second half of this year. And I think as investors have started to price in less cuts, and certainly potential for higher interest rates on a go-forward basis, we think it's going to have more of a material impact on the belly of the municipal bond curve. So that sort of 3 to 7 year maturity range. I think as a result, we're probably cautious on adding to duration in that belly and prefer a barbell approach to duration. So we think investors should probably be better suited staying inside of 3 years And then where they do look to add duration, staying in maturities longer than 7 years, as we think that belly could be quite volatile over the next 6 to 12 months for sure.
Right, right. Yeah, and I've also noticed that, you know, even at the 10-year spot, you know, munis are kind of on the expensive side. So we've been talking about the barbell as well. Moving on to, let's talk a little bit about sectors. I know, like, with munis, you know, as you said before, like, in high yield, it's certainly, you know, case by case looking for opportunities. But in the investment grade segment, I often get asked about, you know, what sectors we're finding opportunities. And by contrast, what sectors would we avoid? So how would you answer that question?
Yeah, I mean, we started out with sort of high yield and our expectations that we still have room to run. We think credit, you know, still makes sense at this point in the cycle and is going to continue to outperform. So for us, it's really, you know, non-essential, essential services. So healthcare, housing and education, and probably more specifically, some of those lower investment grade names in hospital systems. You could probably put in on the housing side, lower income subsidized housing, as well as education, more specifically charter schools. Mm-hmm. And I think that's for a number of different reasons. Hospital systems, I think, continue to rebound from the COVID lows that we saw. They've seen improved admissions, certainly margin improvement. And then some of the staffing pressures that they've gone through over the last 3 years have abated for the most part. So this is a sector that has performed well over the last 3 months, and we'd expect to continue still offering attractive valuations for the risks. To the housing point that I made, residential real estate continues to be an issue maybe across U.S. With an undersupply and outsized demand. I think you couple that with some of the immigration and migration patterns within the United States, and this should be really bullish for performance overall. I'd say in addition, we feel like if the economy does slow, I think focusing on that low income and subsidized housing should insulate to any price pressures in that broader real estate sector. And then to the third sector that we are really finding attractive opportunities and have spoken more and more about probably over the last several years has to do with the charter school space. So this is a sector we've liked for some time, Kathleen. I mean, really, academics have improved over the years. We've seen growth in terms of enrollments, wait lists, and just overall demand for quality education across the U.S. So this was certainly seen through COVID as a lot of the charter schools we're focused on actually outperformed their public school peers. And you know, certainly have been paid in full as a result of that, you know, in a post-COVID world. I think when you look at valuations too, it's a space that, you know, we find a lot of attractive opportunities.
Okay. And I'm guessing you have to do a lot of credit work with that sector as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, listen, active portfolio management is something that, you know, something that we preach here, and I think you certainly need to do your credit work. It's not AAA rated. It's not AA rated. So yeah, fundamentals are of uber importance within that sector.
Right, right. And are there any sectors that you're avoiding right now, or is it much more just on a case by case basis?
No, certainly. So I think probably more cautious. I wouldn't say avoiding, but I'd say more cautious on state general obligation bonds at the moment. I think when we look at some of the budgetary pressures that have popped up, we're starting to see some cracks there. You're seeing sales and income tax collections that certainly have peaked. And then when we look mm-hmm. at valuations, maybe looking a bit rich at the moment, probably prefer more the local general obligation versus the state. I'd say in addition to that, within transportation, mass transit, still a bit cautious on. Things have certainly rebounded. You can look to the MTA as an example of that, but certainly not quite back to pre-COVID ridership levels. And there still remains an over-reliance, in our view, on both local and state appropriations for those. So just two sort of sectors that we'd probably be a bit cautious on.
Okay. And mostly because of the valuations are probably too rich for the near-term risks. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I don't think we're looking at any pending, you know, uptick in defaults.
Right.
But certainly relative to valuations, not something that we would view as really attractive at this moment.
Right. Yeah, thanks for that, John. And now let's move on to the presidential election coming up again. Here we are, you know, later this year. So with that, we've already been seeing quite a few headlines about the renewed threats to the tax exemption of munis. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that topic.
Yeah, I feel like every 4 years we've gotten used to this discussion, right,
absolutely.
Kathleen?
So, absolutely.
You know, I'll just say that I think we view the likelihood. I'll start out with we view the likelihood of the loss of the tax exemption as being a very low likelihood. I think given the infrastructure spending needs of the U.S., you know, outside of the tax-exempt municipal bond market, there really isn't a better way to fund that infrastructure spend. So unless the federal government wants to fund, you know, local capital projects or increase their just general funding to state and local governments, I just don't see this as getting much serious traction. Again, I think low likelihood.
Right.
Just sort of right. Stop it there.
Right. Yeah, that's consistent with our view. But certainly, I expect to see more headlines as the year progresses, right? Kind of like we did last time around.
Yeah, I mean, for the asset class, in a worst-case scenario, right, you lose the tax exemption. The most likely scenario that we would see is that outstanding debt would be grandfathered in terms of the tax exemption. And, you know, in that instance, headed into the election, I'd actually want to own more tax-exempt paper. So, again, I don't think a real risk, but, you know, the downside is to not own enough tax-exempt paper in that scenario,
right.
If you ask me.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a very good point. Now, shifting to taxable munis, I mean, certainly a much smaller part of the muni market, but an important part of the muni market, what we're seeing in recent months is that the callability of some of the taxable Build America bonds has been occurring via those extraordinary redemption provisions. So we haven't seen those calls triggered in probably a decade. So against that, what are your thoughts on the impact to that smaller portion of the municipal market?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think it's good if you own taxable municipal debt in the sense that you know, there's going to be some scarcity uplift if you do see that estimated $30 to $40 billion that's coming out of that marketplace, right? You're going to have at least similar levels of demand and lower levels of supply. That being said, you know, I think if you're a buyer of paper in that space, you know, you've got less issuance to invest in. So, you know, I can't imagine that investors in the taxable municipal space are looking at this as really a good thing, as they've got paper that's you know, being called away from them. But I do think that it's been supportive of overall valuations in the taxable municipal debt space. We've seen that with the performance thus far this year, certainly could be contributing to that, where taxable municipal debt has outperformed their corporate counterparts. Outperformed the U.S. Ag, with the U.S. Ag down almost 150 basis points on a year-to-date basis. So I think that can only provide even more of a tailwind if we do continue to see those outstanding BABS bonds being called away. Although, you know, if you see the headlines, it is being contested to some degree most recently.
Right. Yeah, and then, yeah, because I've been looking at the performance as the, you know, the sector as a whole, and it's actually been outperforming, as you said, because, you know, the Build America bonds is still a much smaller part of the outstanding taxable muni market, like maybe 10% or so. So that could be another reason. Moving on, we talked about high-yield munis, taxable munis, threats to tax exemption, individual sectors for performance, you know, for opportunities. Are there any other areas of the market that are getting maybe little attention that you think investors should be aware of? I mean, you talked about quite a few sectors, charter schools, hospitals, housing bonds, I think. Anything else on your radar in terms of areas of the muni market?
No, I think we've touched upon a lot today. You know, I do think that there are benefits for, you know, strategies and investors that do have the ability to invest in both taxable paper and tax exempt paper. We've seen growing interest from clients that want to give their managers the ability to go between the two. And I think that makes perfect sense, right? So when we see where ratios of tax exempt municipal debt looks cheap or rich relative to their either treasuries or corporate counterparts, you know, I think giving the manager the ability to either overweight or underweight between the two makes a lot of sense. And I think on a go-forward basis, it's something that investors need to maybe pay a bit more attention to. So just something pertinent that we're speaking to about with our investors.
Okay. Yeah. No, that's a good point. So let's end with those points. In summary, you know, you're constructive on muni credit going forward. You see opportunities in muni high yield. You noted that taxable equivalent yields in the high yield sector could be as high as 9%, which is pretty attractive. The threat to the tax exemption is still relatively low, but we expect to see more headlines on that. And I mean, overall, you're pretty constructive on the muni market as a whole going forward. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, John, for speaking with us today. We greatly appreciate your insights on the municipal bond market. As always, that is John Mondillo, head of U.S. fixed income from Aberdeen Asset Management.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliates. The views and opinions expressed in this material by external guest speakers are those of the author, speaker, and are not those of UBS, its subsidiaries, or affiliates. Accordingly, UBS does not accept any liability over the content of this material or any claims, losses, or damages arising from the use or reliance of all or any part thereof. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient, and is published for informational purposes only. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.